Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Meenal's World. Thank you all for tuning in again this week and sharing your comments on the previous episodes. A lot of you have been asking about my first interview with Ravine and how she's been doing. We'll try and have a follow-up interview with her so you can all follow her progress. And this week I spoke to Priya Krishna. She's an Indian-American food writer and recently released her second cookbook, Indianish. It's a celebration of a life as an Indian American and her mom's cooking. Priya talks about how she fell in love with her mother's cooking after spending most of her childhood feeling too embarrassed to embrace her identity as an Indian American. It was to the extent that she would only pack peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for school lunch, and now you can see the amazing recipes that she's putting out there. Her journey over the last few years from writing recipes at university to releasing her own cookbook was purely one of self-belief and passion. And she mentions how she never took no for an answer and always found a way to turn a no into a yes. So I'll let you listen to the lovely lady herself. It's Priya Krishna. Welcome to the show, Priya, and thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Priya, I first found you on YouTube when I was trying to surprise my husband with an interesting dish. And the first thing that I saw on YouTube was dahi toast, actually. So when I Googled interesting Indian dishes, something along those lines, I saw Priya Krishna and I saw this dahi toast. And I thought, wow, it's really interesting. I mean, never heard of these two things together, actually. So when I watched your video, I think it kind of became like, you know, when you become addicted to a Netflix series where you just click the next episode. It just sort of became that thing where I kept going next, next, next. And before you knew it, my husband had already come back from work and I cooked nothing because I just kept watching your videos. I just kept going and I found it really interesting the way you tell your stories and how raw you are with your truth about your relationship with Indian food, especially. And that really resonated with me because I think a lot of us actually go through this at some stage in our life, whether it's Indian food or even language or fashion. It happens through every aspect of our life.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you were on CBS, you were introduced as a chef who makes Indian cooking less intimidating. Is that how you describe yourself as a chef?
I would not describe myself as a chef. Okay. No, definitely not.
So what would you describe yourself as?
I would describe myself as a cook.
Okay. So when you were on the CBS, Priya, I could see how everyone really enjoyed your food. And I was quite jealous, actually. I was like, I wish I could be on that table just eating everything because everything looks so colorful and so vibrant. And is this how your food is seen, actually, in a country like America where Indian food is, I wouldn't say new to them, but it's quite different to what the traditional food is.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that kind of drives me crazy is when people say she's making Indian food more accessible. I'm not making Indian food anything. Indian food is accessible, period. Mm-hmm. You know, like if Indian food weren't accessible, billions of people wouldn't be making it every single day.
Yep.
And so I like to say that I'm showing Indian food is accessible and that these flavors are super doable on a weeknight, just by leaning into my personal story and sharing the food that I grew up eating. I just happen to think my mom is an exceptional cook and that her recipes are kind of equal parts, really simple, minimal ingredients, minimal fuss, but also really bright and really flavorful. And I just felt that it was, you know, a repertoire of dishes that I felt like would resonate with people.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sort of a feeling about how Indian food has sort of become, or at least some parts of the world try to westernize it? I don't know what it's like in American culture so much, but in British culture, for example, people just associate Indian food with a curry and
right.
having like a butter chicken curry or a vindaloo curry, which is pretty much every curry has the same taste. They use the same sort of curry paste and they just add a different ingredient to it. And when I invite my British friends home and I offer them a different type of meal, like dal or something, they're just completely taken away by it. And there's a part of me that gets a bit frustrated sometimes that Indian food is seen as just a curry or, you know, just a naan bread. So how do you feel about the westernization of Indian food?
Yeah, I mean, I do wish that Indian food wasn't viewed in such an oversimplified manner, just based off of, you know, a few dishes that are you know, representative of one era and one region of Indian cooking. And like you said, very often restaurants will use the same sauce across a bunch of different dishes.
Yeah.
But I also think that, like, there's a difference between, like, sort of this more careless fusion that often happens to foods in America and this sort of personalization that I think is happening in my generation, where Indian Americans whose parents immigrated here from South Asia are taking the food of their heritage and adapting it to their American setting and their American upbringing. And I think that is really beautiful. You know, seeing, you know, people like Marwan Irani in Atlanta and Asheville making kale pakoras, or Preeti Mistry make dosa waffles. Like, I don't know. I think that's very, that's a really fun direction. But I think for me, what I think is problematic in the westernization is, one, the overgeneralization of Indian food, the lack of specificity, the lack of the sort of erasure of nuance and regionality in Indian food, the reduction of everything to the word curry. And the second thing is, like, when, you know, Indian ingredients like turmeric or dishes like khichdi become really popular in, you know, mostly wellness circles, and the attribution to Indian history and culture gets lost, they sort of become divorced from context. I wish people would acknowledge the history and the legacy of those dishes.
Yeah, I think that a lot of us have that same similar feeling towards it, because a few weeks ago I had a guest of mine, she's a poet, a spoken word poet, and we spoke about cultural appropriation versus cultural appreciation, which is a very fine line, because we want to invite people to enjoy our food and culture. We're not putting any red flags or red barriers to it, but we want people to enjoy it. But we also want people to understand and appreciate where it comes from, because our history, not just with our culture, but even with our food, is so vast that I think we are quite protective over it as well. We don't want it to sort of get lost or diluted over the generations.
Definitely.
Just to go back from to the beginning, for our listeners who probably haven't had a chance to research who you are, I just want to start with your upbringing. From what I've read, that you were raised in Dallas with your parents and your siblings. Were you raised in a very traditional household?
Traditional in the sense that we ate Indian food every night except Tuesday, which is when my mom fasted. We celebrated most holidays. We went to the temple semi-regularly, but I think my parents really wanted us to feel at home in American culture. So, you know, where other Indian parents did things like they didn't let their kids go to the prom or to dances, or they, you know, only put Indian food in their lunch boxes, my parents let us go to dances. They taught themselves to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches so that they could pack those for our lunch. So I think they were sort of really interestingly careful to sort of toe this line between making us deeply appreciative of our heritage, but just wanting us to fit in this school where, you know, frankly, there weren't a lot of other brown kids.
Yeah. Because I think we have, from our parents' generation, we have a lot of different sort of views on how people wanted to raise their kids. So as you said, that your parents were quite open to allowing you to integrate within the American culture. I think with my example, I think my mother was so terrified that we'd become too westernized that she sort of became too overprotective over us. So when we had these like proms and dances, we weren't allowed to go, because I think there was a fear that we would ingrain that culture within ourselves and would become too westernized. So I think that the balance was quite difficult to find at that time, because everyone was afraid to lose their culture, but also trying to fit into this new sort of life and society. Where did your parents come from, Priya?
Well, it's a complicated question. The simple answer is they're both from Uttar Pradesh, but my mom's dad was a judge and my dad's dad worked sort of the equivalent of the Indian Navy. So there was a lot of moving around that happened. Mm. But UP is sort of the base region where my family is from.
And do you go back often?
I don't go back as often as I would like. I was there about a year ago reporting a story, and it was really exciting to go to India by myself for the first time and hang out with family on my own terms. But I wish that I, you know, we used to make those sort of annual 2-week trips, and we're all so busy, we don't get to do that. But I'm hoping that in coming years, I'll be able to at least go once a year or once every other year.
Yeah. And do you feel going back helps you stay connected to your roots? Or do you feel like you can feel that same connection even in America now, because we are, you know, we live in societies where we're surrounded by a lot of South Asian people. So we don't actually feel like we're missing out on too much.
I have a really amazing group of South Asian women who, like, I truly could not live without. And they make me feel at home and make me feel so connected to my heritage. I go home a lot. I have a big, big extended family, but there is nothing like being in India. Mm. You know, there is just like that, the smell when you get off the plane of India is just so distinct, you know, being around that organized chaos in Delhi, which is where a lot of my family lives.
You call it organized chaos. I just call it chaos.
and, you know, for me, I just love, my Hindi leaves a lot to be desired. And I love the challenge of, because I will just like confidently speak what I believe to be Hindi to anyone. I just say it so confidently. I'm like, how can they like challenge me that that's not Hindi? Yeah. And so I just love the opportunity to just like speak Hindi to whoever I can and get better and, you know, to see my family and, you know, to eat idli at my favorite idli place and to have chaat on the streets and to, you know, have, you know, pani puri and just like that, these experiences you can only really, you can get all those foods in America, but the experience of having them in India is just so distinct and it's just so fun.
It's a very unique thing as well, I think, standing on the streets of Delhi compared to standing on the streets of I don't know, New York or London is quite different. And I think, as you said, you know, the atmosphere and the vibe is something that we treasure quite a lot. And just out of curiosity, Priya, what is your favorite street food in Delhi?
My favorite street food in Delhi would probably be kachoris. I cannot live without kachoris. I had like just polished off like 2 or 3 parathas and chandni chowk when I was there last. And then I like turned the corner and there was a guy setting up like a kachori stand. And I was like, well, I'm not going
to
have these kachoris.
So Priya, actually, I was told that there's this place in Delhi. I've never been to it myself. I don't know if you have. It's called a Paranta Wali Gully. So it's
that's
full...
where I was.
Oh, is that in chandni chowk?
Yeah.
Oh, right. I need to go there. I go to Delhi almost every year and I've never heard of this place. It was only a few months ago someone mentioned it, and I definitely have to go there now. And if you're saying there's kachori as well, I mean, no reason not to.
Like, as soon as you exit the alleyway, it's right there. You can't miss it.
Yeah, wow. I'm really definitely gonna make sure I make a trip there just for that. So Priya, when you were raised in your family, I think you mentioned quite a few in some videos that I watched, you did mention that you asked your mom to pack you peanut butter jelly sandwiches because not very comfortable in your identity as an American Indian. At that time when you were so young, did you have anyone to speak to about it, or any sort of role model to look up to and guide you as to how you were feeling and maybe help you through the process of identifying who you were?
Not really. I mean, I relied so much on, there were every so often a book or a movie would come out like Born Confused or Bend It Like Beckham. And I felt so seen by those, but they were so few and far between that it was really hard to, also like when you're a kid, you don't really know what you're reckoning with. You feel very insecure, but you can't really identify why you're feeling insecure, why you feel isolated, why you feel excluded. And if you had asked me back then, I wouldn't have been like, because of my Indian identity, obviously, because of the color of my skin. When you're a kid, you have a hard time kind of teasing that out, I think.
I think we face this at such a young and tender age that we, as you said, you made a good point. We don't actually recognize what emotion we're feeling, whether it's frustration or confusion towards, you know, who we are. But I think now we're a generation where we're encouraging people to embrace who we are and feel comfortable in their own identity. But What do you think can be done differently in our households now to educate young South Asians to be comfortable about who they are, and even to the extent of celebrating their identity?
I think like having these very open conversations. I think that this sort of like, in my household at least, that frankness and openness was sort of missing. Like, I think it's a lot of the reason why, like, you know, you don't see a lot of, like in the Indian culture I grew up with, there weren't a lot of conversations about like mental health, seeing a therapist. It just wasn't as much of, it wasn't something that I even knew was available to me. And I just hope that people have these conversations at a really early age with their kid, not to be like, you know, you're brown, I just want you to know that, but just talking about the racial issues in our country, the systemic biases that exists, you know, the patriarchy. I think that these are really important issues to talk about at a young age. And, you know, you don't have to talk about it in serious ways. I think there are ways to kind of to talk about it in a way that engages children at a young age, while also just making sure that they're aware of these issues that exist.
I think a lot of the times when we face these issues, it all boils down to communication. I think now we are more educated, we're more worldly, we've traveled more, we've seen more. So I think that communication gap hopefully will narrow down in the future when we have our own kids. But Priya, what was that turning point for you where you went from, I want peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, to I want to actually write a cookbook on my mother's food? Was there a specific point, or did it just happen gradually?
So it didn't really happen until a lot later. After I graduated, I worked for a food magazine, but I was so young and I was kind of scared to speak up. We didn't cover a lot of Indian food, and it felt like an oversight to me, but I was very much of the belief, like, these people know food. Like, there's nothing that I can say that will add something valuable. And then after I quit and I started writing about food, I realized that there weren't a lot of people, Indians, writing about Indian food. There were a few, but there weren't a ton. And I started pitching Indian food ideas and realized that, like, I could bring my experience to the table and write about it. I wrote about, you know, how to pick and ripen mangoes. I co-wrote with my dad. I wrote an ode to dal. I wrote a piece on chai. I wrote a guide to chaat. And these were sort of the early stories that formed the basis of my career. And ultimately, an editor got in touch with me who was a fan of my mother's recipes from the Lucky Peach days. And she was the one who came to me with this idea, like, you write so much about your family. Your mom's recipes are clearly fantastic. What about writing a cookbook about this? And that's kind of when I started coming full circle and realizing this thing that my whole life I felt was a liability could really be a strength.
So Priya, you studied in Dartmouth University, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And what did you study there?
I was a French and government major.
Right. Okay. So nothing to do with with cooking or anything like that. It was quite different.
I wrote my thesis on food and restaurants. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wrote countless papers on food, whether they related to government or not, much to the chagrin of my professors.
Yeah. So Priya, I think there was a video that I watched where you said that, and I'm not sure at what point this was when you were at university, but you said that you had sent out job applications. I think it was maybe after you graduated, but you told your parents that you send these job applications out, but you never actually did.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Are we allowed to talk about this?
Yeah. I said that on the record. Yeah, I did. I told my dad I sent all these cover letters to all these banks and consulting firms, and that I didn't actually send them.
So when you did say that to your dad and you said that, sent everything out, at that time, were you in your head sort of thinking, I don't want to do any of that, my passion is with cooking? Did you have that sort of self-belief that, gee, I don't need to go into these big companies, I believe in what I'm doing and this will work out for me?
Of course not. I had no idea what I wanted. All I knew is that it felt wrong to submit these banking applications, and I wanted to run as far away from them as humanly possible and then figure it out from there.
So what were you thinking at that point? I mean, at that point, if you're not sending out your applications, because the thing is, Priya, we are from a we're from families where our timelines are sort of set from the day we're born, right? Like, we're going to send our child to university, they're going to graduate, they're going to get a job, they're going to get married. So when you're at that position where you've told your parents, okay, send out job applications, but really you haven't, what were you planning on doing? Did you have a sort of anxiety as to what would happen in the future? Were you worried about anything, or you just thought actually something will show up?
I had this vague idea in my head that I wanted to go into food, but I had no idea what careers were available, what places were even hiring, what opportunities would be available to me as someone who was a, you know, liberal arts student living in New Hampshire at the time, with not a ton of experience with food. But, you know, I just started sending emails, just started writing about my passion for food and emailing people and hoping for the best.
Hmm. And you said that you wrote your first book. I think your first book was Ultimate Dining Hall Hacks. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Is that the book that your dad helped you publish?
Yes. Well, my dad drove me to the post office so that I could stamp and mail 50 book proposals when I was like a senior in college. This was over my winter break.
So this was before you had supposedly sent out these job applications?
No, this was after. Okay. The job applications were for internships my sophomore summer. So this was my senior year. This
right.
was well after I'd done my internship at the Food Network and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what was that feeling like to have your dad on board with you and sort of encourage you to sort of follow your passions through? Because right now I'm a doctor and my husband's a doctor as well. And my passion is within sort of sharing stories and podcasting, and my husband's passion lies within music. So when we talk to our parents about doing this after work, so, you know, I tell my mom, well, I was at the hospital all day, I'm coming home recording a podcast. Like, it's not that she doesn't support it, it's that she doesn't really understand why I'm doing it. Because they come from that school of thinking. So how did it feel for your dad to say, actually, I'll drive you and I'm going to sort of be by your side while you do this? What was that feeling like?
I mean, he thought that publishing a book was going to be like a fun side project, but ultimately he in his head thought I was going to go into consulting. So
do you think he was just sort of entertaining your hobby at that time?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, it took a lot while for them to be fully on board. And also, I was still in college at the time.
Yeah.
They were like, of course, we'll help her pursue whatever passion she wanted. I think, you know, in my family, I've always been the one who has the wild, offbeat ideas. And I think in general, my parents have always been happy to entertain them. But I think I was always really, really studious and always got pretty good grades. And I think they always just assumed I would go to grad school, I'd be a lawyer, I'd be a consultant, you know, I'd have these creative hobbies, but a very serious job.
Mm. And what was the time difference between where you'd published Ultimate Dining Hall Hacks and Indianish? What was the time difference between both books?
Ultimate Dining Hall Hacks came out right after I graduated from college. And so that was 2013. And Indianish came out in 2019, so 6 years
mm-hmm,
later.
Mm-hmm. And you wrote that book with your mom as well, is that right?
I didn't write Ultimate Dining Hall Hacks with my mom.
No, the second one.
Indianish with my
yeah.
mom.
Yeah. What was that like to work on this project? Because this project is something where it's not just about writing recipes, it's sort of emanating your history as a family. So what was that like to work with your mom?
I mean, it was amazing in so many ways in that, you know, I had not only a recipe developer, but like a real emotional support and someone who honestly is like, my mom is a born project manager. So she was very good at keeping us on task. She never missed any of the deadlines that I set for her. But, you know, it was also like we would argue constantly about how something's supposed to taste like. My mom would say, you know, I would ask her how many teaspoons and she would be like, I don't know. And she'd take out her rusty disposable spoon she uses to spoon the spices into the dish and be like, however much this is. And I would get so frustrated for not measuring anything. So,
yeah.
You know, it had all of the frustrations you can imagine working with your mom would be like, but also all the good parts.
Mm. And Priya, there was one video, obviously I watched lots of videos of you, but there was one specific one where I remember you did say that, you know, you you really believed in what you were doing. And there was a time where you walked past the New York Times building and said, well, to yourself, one day I could be working here. So do you want to tell our listeners a bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was when I moved to New York. I'm obsessed with the New York Times building. It's by this architect, Renzo Piano, and the outside almost looks like a newspaper. It's like black and white. And it's just like a gorgeous building. And I always just romanticized the Times, you know, since I graduated, I wanted to be able to write even a 50 word piece for them. I wanted to just, it just felt like the pinnacle to me. You know, everything that I did, that I loved doing in school, writing, researching, reporting, the sort of like relentless search for the truth was sort of embodied at that place. And, you know, it just, I like put it on this pedestal, like from day one, and thought maybe one day they'll let me write something for them.
And how did you actually get through to working with them? Did you just apply for a job, or did someone help you sort of connect to someone? How did that work?
So one of their editors, Emily Weinstein, who I love, I just kind of made it my mission to just chat with her every time I saw her at a food event. You know, I would sit down next to her at, you know, a dinner. I would reintroduce myself at a conference, and I just wanted to become a familiar face. And so when I left my job and was freelancing, I just kept throwing ideas at her, you know, idea after idea after idea. And I think eventually she was like, okay, this person is hungry to write something. So eventually I had an idea that she liked enough that she was like, okay, let's try you out, 600 words, see what happens. And
And that's how it worked. And so, you know, there was yesterday, actually, I watched a video of you cooking with Madhur Jaffrey. And to be honest, Priya, when I saw that, if that happened to me, I would just be like, okay, I'm going to retire now. That's it. That's because that's as good as it can get. I have lots of questions regarding that specific moment in your life. Because, I mean, how do you prepare for something like that, to cook with such a legend?
Oh, I was so nervous. Thankfully, we've met and hung out a couple of times before, so we are pals. But the idea of cooking side by side with her was terrifying, especially because, you know, a lot of my book is shortcuts, and a lot of her book is like the proper way of doing things. So I said on stage that, like, I don't soak my lentils. And Madhur was like, you don't soak your lentils? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. So when I watched that video, I could just see she just has like an aura around her, and she's that kind of person where you'd feel comfortable with after a bit of time spending time with her. But if we walked in straight into a room, you'd be a bit sort of terrified of her, because she really knows what she's talking about, and you just don't want to mess with anything. But I think you navigated so well around her, and, you know, you're throwing in some jokes, and, you know, you just let her do her cooking, and you did your own thing as well. So I think you did really well, Priya. I was really, really impressed by that, you know.
Thank you.
So now that we've spoken about how, you know, you were raised in this South Asian family and you were struggling with your identity at the beginning, then it came full circle. At this point in your life now, how would you identify yourself? Would you identify yourself as Indian or American or both? Or would you not even put a label to it?
Both. I think I'm both, you know, Indian American. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive.
Yeah. And how would you define your success as a chef right now? Because I'm sure the definition of success has changed for you over the last few years, because as you reach every milestone, you sort of believe in yourself and you say, okay, I can write another book, or I can do another show, or I can keep going. And now we live in a generation where sort of the idea of success seems so easy because social media makes it out that way, you know, and it's quite sort of difficult to navigate your way around that. So how would you define your success? And for you, what is a successful life?
I feel very grateful for the things that I have and the things that I've accomplished. And I don't think I'm good enough at acknowledging what I do have and the privilege that has allowed me to get there. I think you know, I like so many people, I'm always thinking about what's the next thing, what's the next thing, what's the next thing. Hmm. But like from a day-to-day place, like I'm happy I, you know, can afford to live in New York. I'm doing the things that I wouldn't have even dreamt of I'd be able to do in college. I'm pursuing this passion that felt like such a distant dream back in 2013. And it is a great privilege. And I think I wish I was better at taking a step back and feeling really content with that. But instead, I spend so much of my time being like, why didn't I get this? Or I need that. Or this person has that, so I need it. And I think, I don't know, I think it's like something, it's natural, but I think it's something that I need to be better at.
Mm. And apart from your sort of hunger to show people your love and passion for cooking, apart from that sort of self-belief that you had, and that is very admirable, Priya, actually, to see how you've come from where you were in 2013 to now. It's given me a lot of inspiration. I'm sure it'll give a lot of our listeners as well that inspiration they need, because, you know, you can see it's taken you so many years to get to where you are now, and it's not something that happens overnight. But apart from that self-belief, was there any role models you had around you, or was there anything else that sort of drove you to just keep going every day?
I mean, truly, it was this group of girls, of Indian American women that I've become friends with, Tejal Rao, Sonia Chopra, Khushbu Shah. They all work in food media, and they have been my biggest cheerleaders, my biggest advocates, the people that I turn to when I'm struggling to make sense of a failure or a success or a story I'm working on. And I don't think I would be able to do what I do if I hadn't met them.
Mm. And Priya, what do you have any sort of future projects that you have planned, or anything you want to, I don't know if you can tell us, but is there anything we can look forward to with Priya Krishna?
I've got a couple things in the works, but right now I'm just, you know, trying to take a break and appreciate that this is a year that I don't have a book coming out, and maybe just take some more deep breaths than I took in 2019.
Yeah. And Priya, what advice would you give someone who's listening anywhere in the world right now, a young girl who could be struggling with her identity or could be struggling to pursue her passion? If you had to give one piece of advice, what would you say to them?
Perseverance. Like, just do, like, you, so much of my success comes from the hustle and not being afraid to follow up. If someone says no, you know, what can you do to make them say yes? Hmm. You know, a lot of people get that no, or they get that non-response and they give up. I think it's just very important to persevere, and in the face of rejection or non-response, figure out how you can turn it into a yes. Obviously there's a time when you need to just like accept that this is not happening and move on to the next thing. But, you know, I think one thing I've always tried to do is I'm always looking for, you know, I'm always looking for a way to make the no into a yes. And if it becomes a no, I'm like, what's another way I can make this happen? Who else do I know? Who else can I talk to? And I think that'll take you far.
I think that's great advice, Priya. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, we live in a generation where everything is on the tips of our fingers. We want everything quite instantly. So we can order something off Amazon. We can watch any movie on Netflix. And I think that sort of idea has translated into a lot of aspects of our life as well, actually, that we run out of patience when it comes to believing in our passions, and we believe the success can happen overnight or even within a year or two. But as you rightly say, that you have to keep persevering and keep believing in yourself. And I'm really looking forward to see what you have coming up soon, Priya. Do you have any plans to come to London?
I do. My sister actually just moved there. Oh, so right. I'm hoping to come visit her at some point soon.
Oh, great. So I'll find the best Paranta places and the best Kachori places. So we can definitely meet up there. And I just have to say that going back to the very beginning where I found your recipe for Dahitos, that's exactly what I did make for my husband, and he really loved it. And I can't wait to share more recipes with, not just with him, but with the rest of my family as well. So thank you so much for coming on today, Priya. It was so lovely to talk to you. And thank you for your time, because I know how busy you are. And I really enjoyed this conversation.
Same. Thank you.
And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in this week. And a big, big thank you to Priya and her manager, Bridget, for arranging this call. You can find more of Priya's recipes on the Bon Appetit channel on YouTube. Of course, you can order the cookbook Indianish yourself and enjoy the cooking genius of Priya Krishna and her mum, of course. You can also find Priya on Instagram at PK Gourmet. So thank you to everybody who's been tuning in. Please do remember to subscribe on iTunes. This will help us reach out to more people. You can find me on Instagram at Meenals_World. You can find me on Facebook, if anyone still uses that, at Meenals World. And if you have any questions or queries, feel free to drop me an email at any time to meenalsworldpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you all have a lovely week ahead, and I can't wait to see you for the next episode.